Brad's little flame of enthusiasm flickered. Yeah, I bet he would. That's why you don't ask him. Felicia gaped at him. You mean we contact the aliens without telling him first? That's exactly what I mean. But that's... Brad interrupted. I get it. We contact the octopods first and tell Kossoff afterward. Smiling like a canary-fed cat, Nyerere said, And when he blows his stack, you show him that you are following MC's directions. He'd have to accept that, Felicia said. But then she added, Wouldn't he? Brad grinned at her. He would. Nothing he could do about it. The damage would have already been done. He'd have to accept the fact and go on from there. But inwardly, Brad got a vision of being pushed out an airlock by an infuriated Professor Adrian Kossoff. The four of them trooped from the cafeteria to Brad's quarters. While Felicia pulled an assortment of bottles and glasses from the kitchen, Brad and Nyerere commandeered the sofa while Brad called up MC's image. The wall display on the other side of the room lit up to show MC's computer-generated face, innocent, smiling blandly. How can I help you? MC asked. Brad said, What are the protocols for making first contact with an alien race? MC's face grew thoughtful. That's a very tricky matter, Brad. I know. We'd like to understand the protocol as thoroughly as possible. The first criterion, said MC, is the possibility of harm to the aliens. And on, far into the night and the next morning. Rules of Conduct. The digital clock readout in the bottom right corner of the wall screen said 0224. Estella was snoring lightly, stretched out on the recliner. Felicia sat between Brad and Nyerere on the sofa. Brad thought she was staring hard enough at the display to bore a hole through MC's bland, maddeningly smiling image. Nyerere yawned and stretched. Face it, man. There's no way around, Kossoff. There's got to be. So where is it? We've been going through the operational procedures for more than 3 hours now. Every road leads to Kossoff. You can't try to make contact with an alien species unless you get permission from Kossoff and the executive committee. Looking up at the wall screen, Nyerere asked, Isn't that right, MC? That is correct, said the master computer's avatar. Felicia pushed herself up from the sofa. I'm wiped out. I'm going to sleep. She headed wearily toward the bedroom. Brad tried to tell himself he was wide awake, but his eyes felt heavy, gritty. Nyerere got up and went to the sleeping Estella. Touching her arm lightly, he said softly, Come on, kiddo, time to go home. Estella stirred, blinked at him. I dozed off, she muttered. Nyerere helped her to her feet, then turned to Brad. It's been an interesting evening. With a cheerless grin, he added, And night? And morning? Brad walked them to the door. Thanks, Greg. Wish we could have found something, Nyerere said. Would have been fun to twist Kossoff's tail a little. Yeah, fun. Good night. Night. Brad slid the door shut, then started for the bedroom, hoping he was too tired to dream. Felicia was already in bed, her clothes strewn across the floor. Brad undressed and slid in beside her. Then, instead of calling out to the light control and waking her, he twisted around and touched the switch on the wall that turned off the lights. He stared up into the darkness, trying to relax. No dreams, he told himself. Just let me sleep without dreams. And he wondered who he was talking to. The dream, when it came, was different. Brad was out on the floor of Tithonium Chasma, same as always, but this time the canyon wall wasn't collapsing. This time there were huge octopus-like creatures swimming through the thin Martian air, just as if they were in their ocean. How can they swim through the air? Brad wondered. The octopods glided on by him, their tentacles waving gently, their eyes turning to focus on Brad as they passed. And Brad realized he wasn't wearing a pressure suit. He was standing outdoors on Mars in nothing more than a tunic and slacks. No one else was there, only Brad and the train of octopods gliding past. "Aren't you going to say hello?" one of the creatures asked. Its voice was low and melodious. It reminded Brad of his mother's voice. "Hello," he said uncertainly. It's good to talk to you at last, said the octopod. We've been waiting for you to say something, you know. I've wanted to talk to you, Brad responded. No, thundered a heavy voice filled with anger. I won't permit it. And the sheer rock wall of the canyon began to shake, to reverberate as the voice howled with wordless fury. The octopods disappeared as boulders tumbled from the top of the chasm wall, falling slowly, inexorably, onto the flimsy buildings of the human base on the canyon floor. Brad stood riveted, watching in horror as the rocks smashed into the buildings. The canyon floor was strewn with dead bodies. The voice roared, Look at what you've done! You've killed them! You've killed them all! And Brad was sitting up in bed, soaked with cold sweat. Felicia called out for the lights, then turned to him, her face drawn, troubled. She wrapped her arms around Brad. The dream again? It took three tries before he could answer. Yes. No. Not exactly the same. It's all right, dear. It's only a dream. You're safe. I'm here with you. Yes, I know. But he was trembling like a leaf in a windstorm. And he realized that one of the bodies he saw on the canyon floor was Felicia's, her face bloody, her body broken, and beside her, his own. Kossoff and Chang. Inwardly, Brad marveled at how calm he felt. Maybe just a little nervous, but considering the firepower arrayed against him in Professor Kossoff's office, he faced them with unwavering determination. I'm right and they're wrong, he told himself. I'm right and they're wrong. Yes, a voice in his head answered. That's what they'll carve on your tombstone. Sitting behind his desk, Kossoff looked nettled, irritated. Dr. Chang sat at Brad's right, in front of the desk, cool and expressionless, the perfect, inscrutable Oriental. The chair on Brad's left was empty. Dr. Littlejohn had promised to join this meeting, but he hadn't shown up yet. Kossoff broke the tense silence. I don't have all day to wait for Littlejohn. You asked for this meeting, McDaniels. What's it all about? Has Littlejohn bailed out on me? Brad wondered. Dr. Chang and I have better things to do than to wait for your department chief, Kossoff growled. Either fish or cut bait. Brad blinked at the ancient catchphrase, but he knew he either had to start talking or Kossoff would end the meeting before it began. It's about the octopods on planet Alpha, he started. I assumed as much, said Kossoff. I want to test the data we've amassed about their language. If it is a language, Chang cautioned. That's what we've got to find out, Brad said. Kossoff fixed Brad with a stern gaze. And just how do you propose... The office door slid open and Littlejohn stepped in, looking somewhere between harassed and apologetic. I'm sorry to be late, he said, hurrying to the empty chair beside Brad. One of my people got into an altercation with one of the crew members. An altercation? Kossoff asked. Chang asked, You mean a fight? Pulling a tissue from his pocket and mopping his forehead, Littlejohn answered, Not a fight. No physical violence. But their voices were loud enough to hear for a kilometer or two, in every direction. What were they arguing about? Kossoff asked. Oh, my man was doing a routine questionnaire about the man's duties. And he took offense, thought he was being accused of loafing on duty. That's strange, Chang murmured. And Brad found himself wondering if Kossoff set up the confrontation just to keep Littlejohn from getting to this meeting. You're getting paranoid, he told himself. But the disappointment on Kossoff's face told him that he might be right. Very well, Kossoff said. We're all here. Turning to Brad, he asked, And just how do you intend to test the data about the octopod's noises? We say hello to them in their own language. Chang's eyes widened. Kossoff's face froze for an instant. Then he snapped, Absolutely not! That would be a contact, said Chang. Littlejohn pointed out, But we've already contacted them, haven't we? We've sent probes to study them. That's not contact, Kossoff argued. Brad said, MC says it is. The master computer? Ask him. Clearly unhappy, Kossoff nevertheless called to the wall screen, Master computer, please. MC's placidly smiling face took form on the screen. How may I help you? Before Brat could speak, Kossoff asked, Do the probes we inserted among the octopods on Alpha constitute a contact between our two species? In the strictest sense of the word, yes. We have made a form of contact with the alien species. Chang said, But the probes have been completely passive. Then, realizing that that was not entirely true, she added, Except for the neutrino scans, of course. And I don't see how those animals could detect neutrino scans. MC replied, The octopods have given no indication of being aware of the scans, but they were certainly curious about the probes when we first inserted them among them. That doesn't constitute contact, Kossoff said firmly. I'm afraid it does, MC contradicted. Mission guidelines define various levels of contact. Passive contact, such as the probes represent, is contact nonetheless. If the octopods are intelligent, they must realize that those probes are foreign objects. They talked to them, Brad said. When they first encountered them, said Kossoff. They've ignored them ever since. Littlejohn suggested, Perhaps they've accepted them as visitors. Nonsense, Kossoff retorted. I know how we can test whether they're intelligent or not, said Brad. Before anyone could interrupt him, he went on. We say hello to them. Use the probes to broadcast the sound cluster we've identified as their phrase for greeting. Chang said, We don't know for certain that it's their phrase for greeting. It could be a million other things. But we could find out, Brad insisted, by trying to talk to them. Shaking her head almost violently, Chang said, We've got to study them for a much longer time. Build up a vocabulary. Correlate the sounds they make with their actions, their brain activity. We've been doing that for 6 months now, Brad said. How much do you need before you test the data you've collected? Littlejohn said, Dr. Chang, I understand that you've only put three of your people into studying the octopod's language. That's all the manpower I can spare, Chang replied, almost defensively. Most of our effort is dedicated to the bipeds on planet Gamma. So it could take years before you're ready to speak to the octopods? Surprisingly, Kossoff said, We don't have years. They all turned squarely toward him. Looking unhappy, troubled, Kossoff said, This mission is supposed to study the Mithra system for 5 years, then return to Earth. We've already spent more than 6 months here. We're making excellent progress on the Gamma aliens, Chang said. Yes, but we don't really know yet whether the octopods are intelligent, do we? Said Brad. What difference? Chang replied. We can drop the shielding generators into their ocean and protect them from the death wave. Later expeditions can determine if they're intelligent. No, said Kossoff. It's our mission to make that determination. I think the impetuous Dr. McDaniels is right. We need to test whether or not we really can converse with those creatures. Responsibility. Surprised at Kossoff's sudden change of attitude, Brad blurted, You agree? With a grim smile, Kossoff replied, I'm not the ogre that you think I am. I never, Chang interrupted, I protest. We don't have enough hard evidence that the octopods actually have a language. Waving one hand in the air, Kossoff said, McDaniels' idea of trying to speak to them has some merit. We can determine very quickly whether they actually have a language, or if they're merely making hoots and whistles like chimpanzees. The chimps have language, Chang said. It's primitive, but it is a working language. Kossoff asked MC's image, What possible damage could be caused by speaking to them? We have insufficient data for a firm answer, the computer's avatar replied.